Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We would like to welcome our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station in Memphis that's going to be carrying this show and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider audience in the American South. We're joined today by Dr. Robert Sungenis of Catholics Apologetics International, talking about neocons and the Jewish connection. And we had a caller just before the last commercial break. Jim, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Did you have anything else for Dr. Sungenis? If you do,
I have one for you, Mark, being you're the Lutheran of the bunch. Didn't Martin Luther actually study the Talmud before he came out with his giant rant against our Jewish brethren? I read somewhere that he did, that he had one and he studied it.
That's my understanding. And, of course, it's interesting that you asked that question because... historically, in my own theological education at Valparaiso University, and then, of course, I was later at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, and then Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, I don't remember, believe it or not, in any of those classes that the Babylonian Talmud was ever discussed. In other words, I came away from my education thinking, well, you have religious Jews who believe in the Torah, and then you have secular Jews who don't believe in the Torah or any other form of revelation. As far as the Babylonian Talmud was concerned, and such things as the Kabbalah and the Zohar, I was never instructed in any of these matters or really given a lot of research into the specifics of what was in these texts or what the implications were. I'd like to bring Dr. Sungenis into this conversation at this point. What role does the Babylonian Talmud play in all of this as it relates to some of these current problems?
Well, it plays a lot because the unwritten rule that many of the followers of Judaism go by is the Talmud. They don't come right out and say it much because there's a lot of distinctions in Judaism today between Reform Judaism and Orthodox Judaism and everything in between. But the historical fact is that the Babylonian Talmud, which was created by the Jews when they were sent to Babylon, and people should know the history of this because in 136 A.D., there was the final revolt in Jerusalem led by the Jews, led by a guy named Bar Kokhba, and he was eventually decimated by Hadrian, the Roman emperor, the Roman general, rather, and they sent the Jews off to Babylon, and there they were for the next 1,000 years. And while they were in Babylon, they in about 500 or 600 A.D., they wrote the Babylonian Talmud. And this was the musings of the Jews, what they would get is their own tradition, and they would mix it with the Torah and all kinds of things. It was just a mishmash of Jewish thought. Some of it was good, but a lot of it was bad. And the stuff that is bad is what our caller was just referring to a few minutes ago, which is, the Jews are somehow superior to everyone else in the world. And when you study the Talmud as a child, you're reared in this thinking that somehow you're a special people, even though you've been decimated and you've been sent across the world to every other nation because God has judged you, you're still the chosen people. You're still special. And so they grow up with this mentality, and this mentality seeps into their politics, their theology, their finances. I mean, every part of their life. This is an integral part of how they think, and this is what causes the problem. And what we're here to do is to even out the playing field. We're not here to smash their face into the ground. We're not here to say, "Oh, you people are so evil." We're just here to even out the playing field. Look, we're all sons and daughters of God, and we all need to live together in peace. Nobody is better than anybody else, so let's start from square one and build from there.
We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Obviously, something serious is going on, politically, economically, geologically, and environmentally. And how you prepare for those changes will determine your well-being in the very near future. Now, whether you're preparing for your family, your business, or your country, the Survival Center has the knowledge and experience to assist you in those decisions. Survival Center is America's premier supplier of family preparedness, health, and survival supplies with over 33 years of continuous operation. Now, you can start preparing with just knowledge, and that's why the Survival Center is offering a book. It's called Basic Preparedness, and it's just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And it'll teach you about the four basics of survival: food, water, medical, and shelter. And when you order that book, you'll also get a free Survival Center catalog. Contact us today so we can help you prepare for whatever comes your way. Call us toll-free at 1-800-321-2900 or online at www.survivalcenter.com.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Mark Gantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Robert Sungenis, S-U-N-G-E-N-I-S, and he is the head of Catholics Apologetics International. You can get to that website at catholicintl.org or .com. Bob, I got to look at the thing again.
And it's actually Catholic Apologetics International.
Yeah, and it's singular.
Singular, right.
Yeah, catholicintl.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's Catholic, not Catholics. Catholic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. And as far as this whole issue then of the Talmud is concerned, I wanted to make an observation here and then to ask you something about the specific translations of the Talmud that are out there, because your article seems to indicate that there are some that are more honest translations than others.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the Talmudic spin on, I guess, what you could see as a very strongly held Jewish racial supremacy that seems to emanate from the Babylonian Talmud, it's kind of ironic to me that we've come full circle on some of this when we think about the racialist theories of the National Socialist movement in Germany at the time of Hitler, that there we are looking at that on the one hand, and then the Babylonian Talmud on the other, which seems to espouse racial theories of superiority and supremacy that in and of themselves are also dangerous.
Yeah, and yeah, this has been the perennial problem with humankind. You know, somebody gets the notion that they're better than somebody else, or that their race is more superior to somebody else. And you look down the halls of history, and what you'll see is almost every war, I'd say majority of the wars, are caused by that mentality. You know, whether it's the whites over the blacks or the Chinese over the, you know, the outer Mongolians or whoever it is, you know. And this is where we all need to come and realize, and that's why we're doing programs like this. It's not to bash people's heads in the ground and, you know, point the fingers at everybody. It's to say, look, we're all human beings. We all need to work this out together. Protestant, Catholic, Jew, Muslim, whoever we are, we can all live in peace. We might have our differences, you know, but we can all live in peace. And this is the problem I see over in Israel. You know, it's like, you know, we're superior and we're the chosen people and we deserve this land and come hell or high water, we're going to get it. And we have the nuclear bombs to protect it. And this is where things really get touchy, because the world is sitting on a trigger finger, because if they don't get what they want, you know, we're afraid that the red button's going to be pushed and they're going to bring everybody else down with them if they think they're going to go down. And, you know, that's the dangerous mentality that comes from racial superiority. And we just can't have that in this kind of day and age that we live in, with nuclear bombs imminent in every country.
Hence what Cy Hirsch referred to some years ago as the Samson option.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, as I look at all of this, I find myself as a member of what I would describe as the old American right. I've evolved to that position over a number of years, moving away from certain blind allegiances to some of the things that are routinely presupposed as being true in the hallways of the neoconservative American right. And it seems to me that one of those things that has been healthy for me in evolving to more of an old right American position is that when you look at the foreign policy of this country, or you look at the foreign policy of Israel and this incredibly strange marriage between those two countries and the incredibly strange, diverse constituency that supports this alliance between the United States and Israel, that there is a very, very fascinating and frightening dynamic. And that's not only the sense in which there is a messianic strain in both Israeli foreign policy and American foreign policy that I find to be highly presumptuous to the point of being catastrophically dangerous, as you point out, in regard to this whole issue of nuclear weaponry in the present age. But it also has resulted, it seems to me, in the development of a complete lack of civility in regard to theological and political debate. And I'm referencing this not simply to the fact that when you talk about some of the things that you and I are talking about today, there are those out there who are immediately prepared to utilize the pejorative phrase anti-Semitism and pin that on anyone who chats about these things. But I noticed even last week in the American political debate in the Congress over President Bush's surge policy that whatever one thinks of this policy, and I'm opposed to it for a lot of reasons just beyond that surge situation alone with the 21,500 troops. But as that was being debated, there were several people on the House floor. I'm referring to a Republican congressman from Alaska as we talk, who basically were using the language of ad hominem attack and demonization to suggest that anyone who had any reservations at all about the Bush administration's war on terror and their war in Iraq were basically, by implication, anti-American, by implication, subversive, by implication, people who, you know, weren't rallying around the flag and supporting the troops. Do you get some of that same thing, Robert, when you are talking about some of these things related to neoconservatism in the circles in which you travel?
Yeah, it was a lot stronger a few years ago, but now that there's such a quagmire in Iraq, I think I see a lot of the neoconservatives rethinking their position. And Father Newhouse, by the way, is one of them. Buckley, William F. Buckley, is another. They're saying things like, well, if we knew then what we know now about Iraq, we probably shouldn't have gone in there, you see. So you see a lot of this hand-wringing in the neoconservative camps now But Bush is in such a quagmire, he doesn't know what to do. The only thing he can suggest is, well, let's throw more money at it, you know, and see if that'll do the trick. And that's just like saying, well, let's throw more troops at it and let's see if that'll do the trick. But they have no idea what they're doing over there. And that's because they went in under false pretenses. And once you do that, and then you find out how, and it's Vietnam all over again, of course, and you probably lived through that, Mark, just like I did, and we've never learned our lesson from there. You
my
know?
My dad was involved in a couple of tours of duty in Vietnam as an Air Force officer, and, of course, I lived through that as you did, Robert. I remember the things that were going on in grade school and junior high school and high school for me related to this incendiary debate that was occurring at that time in regard to the efficacy or the lack of efficacy in the Vietnam War effort. What is striking to me is that history seems to be repeating itself, both in terms of the false premises that were utilized to begin the war and then the whole issue of committing this country's military forces to a action that did not have the imprimatur of a congressionally declared war. And then thirdly, the fact that when you have a debate, it seems to me, about the legitimacy of a war after you've already jumped into it, that just creates a very tragic set of circumstances where people who are well-meaning and honorable people on the left and the right in this country who oppose this war, again, find themselves from time to time because of the nature of what has happened, being demonized with this whole thing of being anti-American or not supporting the troops and this sort of thing. And maybe, just maybe, with what's presently happening, we'll eventually reach a point to where there will be a level of civility on this that we've not seen in past times, and that perhaps the American public will have to learn once again what we should have learned in Vietnam, and that is that when you have a war based on certain faulty philosophical premises, and that war begins to become a disaster for the nation, that it really is an indication that the policy and the lack of discussion related to the policy before it started can just have catastrophic results.
Yeah, every nation that has tried the imperialistic route has been decimated. You can go back to Spain or England, Germany, whoever it is, the thought that they were going to rule the world, that they were better than other people, they were going to impose their ideas and their economics and their politics on various peoples of the world, and that's where America is now, and that's where we were in the 1960s. I mean, Lyndon Baines Johnson was talking about the Great Society. We were it, you know, because we were making most of the money, and everybody was happy and had two cars in the garage. And we were going to impose ourselves upon the world, and that's called imperialism. And whenever you do that, you find out how hard it is to extend yourself 10,000 miles away when you find out that it's difficult, and then you don't have the people behind you anymore, and that's where we are right now. That's why the Dixie Chicks won their Grammy Award. You know, three or four years ago, their faces were mud because they were against the war. Now, when we see that the war has taken a turn for the worse, you know, they're up number one now, because, and that shows you how the attitude has changed dramatically in the last 4 years. And that's why the House and Senate are now Democratic. They're not Republican anymore. So we see that they're getting their just desserts.
What do you make of the fact, and I've talked about it on this show in recent days, that, you know, on the one hand, it's at least pretty clear to you and to me, and I assume to most of our listeners, that it is not unfair, and I guess maybe I should reference this again to the Ginsburg book that you cite, Benjamin Ginsburg, The Fatal Embrace, Jews in the State, University of Chicago Press, 1993. It is not unfair to say that there has been a very strong Jewish component to this war in terms of political backing for it, and that the connection of the United States to the Zionist movement since 1948 seems to be really bound up in what we're doing over there. What do you make of the fact that in spite of the situation that has caused a Democratic takeover up on Capitol Hill again as of the first Tuesday in November, that we still have people like Hillary Clinton and John Edwards and Barack Obama doing their obeisance to the Jewish lobby? And when we come back, I wanted to make reference to that with special underscoring of Hillary Clinton's recent remarks to the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
Mark Danhoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined by Dr. Robert A. Sungenis of Catholic Apologetics International. You can find that at CatholicINTL.com. Talking about neocons and the Jewish connection, Dr. Sungenis, before the break, we were just referencing this whole issue of what seems at one level to be a backlash politically against this war. And that backlash has been certainly suggested by the poll numbers, which show increasing opposition to it, a downturn in Mr. Bush's popularity, the Democratic takeover on Capitol Hill. And yet what are we to make of the fact that Hillary Clinton and John Edwards, just to name two, have made speeches before, in Mrs. Clinton's case, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee and the Herzliya Conference in Israel. Edwards appeared in the latter format, I understand. And when you look at these speeches being made by major figures running for the presidency of the United States on the Democratic side of the aisle. I'm amazed at how bellicose the language can be coming from these people in regard to supporting Israel and potentially fighting a war on its behalf, utilizing American troops. Are we in a catch-22 here where the influence that the Jewish lobby has in both of the parties is so strong that there's really no turning back in what seems to be a movement toward a wider war?
Sure. We are in a catch-22. And the Jewish media, which is, you know, basically they own 96% of the media, we can go down the list and detail it all, but, you know, I think people have become aware of that. They will promote whoever is supporting the Jewish agenda, whether it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, or whoever it is. And now, since the Republicans have failed, they didn't secure Iraq, well, they're going to turn to the Democrats. And so the Democrat, they're going to be in bed with the Democrats for the next 4 years. And, you know, if you look at the presidency of Bill Clinton, every one of his cabinet officers were Jewish. Every one. Every one of his 12 cabinet officers were Jewish. And then their underlings were Jewish. So, I mean, if you're going to talk about the Clintons have been in bed with AIPAC for many, many years. And they feed off of one another. So we're not going to get any new diet from if Hillary Clinton is the president. We're going to get the same kind of schmoozing and political opportunism that we've got from the Bush administration for the last 8 years. And so you know, I wouldn't be surprised about that. The thing about Bill Clinton was, you know, he tried to secure this peace accord between Israel and the Arabs and wasn't successful with that. And he did some other things that the Jews didn't like because he got some power under him and he thought he could, you know, do whatever he wanted. And then they sent Monica Lewinsky in there after him, you know, and brought him down. So, you know, there's all kinds of power plays that are going on, and they will continue to go on because this is the world of politics. So I don't expect any bright things if the Democrats get in there. No, not by a long shot.
Yeah, I was struck by something that I think I saw on the front page of yesterday's Wall Street Journal, where it indicated that the Hollywood mogul David Geffen, G-E-F-F-E-N, who, of course, is among a series of Jewish Hollywood personalities that have had longstanding ties to the Clintons, among many others, that he has now apparently decided to shift his endorsement procedures toward the candidacy of Barack Obama. Is that an indication that the Jewish lobby is basically covering all of its bets?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically my read of the whole thing, because as I watch this business unfold, there you've got David Geffen with his historic links to the Clintons suddenly endorsing Barack Obama. You have Hillary Clinton and John Edwards, of course, very much involved in putting their first foot forward with the Jewish lobby. Then there are the Republicans taking what for now at least are the two major candidates in the Republican Party, John McCain and Rudolph Giuliani. You have the situation with those guys where they clearly have been competing for New York Jewish money in regard to their presidential efforts. I mean, this is something that came out again in a Jewish source, the so-called mm-hmm. Jewish Telegraphic Agency. So to me, as I look at this whole thing, it would appear that in spite of the fact that people like you and I maybe are receiving more public sympathy for our views than we would have a few years ago because of what's happened, it still looks to me like the wrong people still have a stranglehold on power, and that stranglehold on power in terms of the American political process is quite likely to guarantee that we're going to be in a wider war with Iran. Would that be your position or your thinking?
I don't know about the Iran thing. I think if the politicians are smart, I think they realize that the American people have a distaste in their mouth now for war. I don't think they want to take the chance of the American public reacting again, vociferously against the war in Iran, as they did with Iraq. I just don't think they want to take that chance. I think the only way they would be able to go Iran is by do it surprise and say, well, we had to do it, and then try to convince the public afterwards. It's going to have to be a surprise attack kind of a thing. And but I think it's a political risk for them to go into Iran. I think the best thing we can hope for right now is
we'll
to play
back.
Out the...
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free 888-699-NEWS or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined by Dr. Robert A. Sengenis of Catholic Apologetics International, which you can find at CatholicINTL.com. We have a caller, John, in Alabama for Dr. Sengenis. Go ahead, John.
Good morning, Mark.
Hi.
I found the discussion this morning extremely informative. You both are theologically far advanced to me, but a couple of points I wanted to bring out, if I could. I haven't heard discussion of the term Pharisee this morning at all, and I kind of wonder the relationship of many of the modern, oh, I don't want to say Zionists, but let's say modern, quote, Jews, to the Pharisees of Christ's day, and the thing that occurs to me is that my reading has told me that the term Jew didn't originate until the 19th century. And we keep using that term in our discussion this morning about people who that term didn't apply to. And I'm I'm a little puzzled, and I wondered if both of you might comment on that.
Well, the term, Mark, did you want to say anything first? Or?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. The term Jew is not an acronym, but it's a abbreviation for Judah. That's where it originates from. And so instead of saying Judah, it just became Jew. But that's the historical use of the term. And the reason for that is Judah was the only two there were two tribes in Judah, Judah and Benjamin, and they were the only two tribes left by the time of St. Paul. The other 10 tribes had been dispersed in 722 by the Assyrians. So since they were the only Jews left, the name stuck, Jews instead of Judah. So I don't know if that helps out your historical perspective on it or not.
Well, my problem with that is, and maybe this goes into another area that maybe you both don't want to go in right now, but my understanding of history is that the modern-day Jew, in a large sense, has nothing to do with the tribe of Judah. And we can, I don't know if you want to go in that direction or not, or if you want to comment on that, but my understanding is that many of the people from the tribe of Judah, the people today who call themselves Jews, are in no way descendant from those people at all.
Well, there's a lot of talk about that today, but I think there's a lot of exaggeration about it as well. To a certain extent, I would agree that there's been such a diversification after the Jews went to Babylon for 1,000 years, and they went to Khazaria in southern Russia, and then they spread out to Spain and to Poland and all those areas there. Yes, the further they went in the dispersion, the less of an identity they may have had. But the fact is that they did preserve at least a percentage of the identity that they had when they left Jerusalem in 136 A.D. and traveled to Babylon. They did have that, even though we can say that, yes, it's been dispersed to the point where we would question what the percentage of a Jew is in a typical Jew that we have today. But it did preserve itself. And this is what St. Paul was talking about also in Romans 11, when he said that the mystery, he talked about the mystery in Romans 11:25. He says, I do not want you Gentiles to be ignorant, brethren, of this mystery. And he talks about the Jews existing until the second coming of Christ. And so if St. Paul says it by the inspiration of God, that means that whatever percentage of it is out there that are still pure Jew, there is a percentage out there that we can call Jew, because that's what we have from the inspired word of God. And we do see that today. I mean, we do have evidence of that. We have Ashkenazi Jews, we have Sephardic Jews, and which one is more pure, I don't know. I think the Sephardic probably is. But nevertheless, we do have a percentage that are still Jewish today.
But may I ask one more question, Mark?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When my recollection in the New Testament, when Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and his oral arguments with them and what all, obviously, and you guys are far advanced than me in this, but when I remember him saying things like, "You are of your father, the devil," can you picture today, and which is what I try to do, when I try to picture Christ talking to the Pharisees of that day, and then I picture the modern-day, quote, Jew, who I believe many of which are of Pharisee descendant, if you will, and I'm trying to picture myself Christ calmly talking to these people today, and yet we want to be kind and gentle and everything, and yet Christ, in oral terms, was not gentle in the way he talked to them. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. When he talked to the Pharisees, he was pointing directly at them. There's some people try to whitewash that and say, well, he's talking to the world. No, he's not talking to the world. He's talking to the Pharisees. He says they were of the father of the devil, and the reason was is because they wanted to kill him. And Matthew makes that quite clear in the last chapters of his gospel, Matthew 21 and 22. Quite clear that they wanted to kill Jesus. And if you want to kill Jesus, yes, you are of your father the devil. But I think we have to draw boundaries around that, however. Jesus was talking to the Pharisees of that day. He's not talking to the Jews today. The Jews today did not kill Jesus. And that's where we have to make the distinction. The Jews of the first century killed Jesus.
I'm not trying to paint that onto the people today,
mm-hmm.
but I agree with that. But My problem is that how can we take a gentle stance with people who believe very much the same as the Pharisees of Christ's day?
I understand your question, and that answer comes from St. Paul in Romans chapter 11. He says this to the Gentiles. He says, the reason you have the gospel today is because of the Jewish unbelief. But be not conceited in your own heart, because just as God cut off the Jews, he can cut you off as well. So what should your attitude be? Not one of conceit, not one of pride, but one of humility toward the Jew. And you give him the same love, give him the gospel, that is, that God gave to you because of their original unbelief. So don't be high-minded. He says, you give them the gospel, show them love and concern, and bring them all into the body of Christ. You see, that's what we want to do today.
I agree with that, but then I'm also hit with the verbiage in the Talmud that is vicious and vile, and I don't believe in any of that at all, yet many Jewish believers today who use the Talmud as their source may not be aware of what it said and how vile it is regard to Gentiles.
Right, and St. Paul said the same thing. He said, you know, what am I going to do? I'm up against people that God himself said were stiff-necked. God himself, the divine being with perfect patience, gave up on the Jews. So what am I, Paul, going to do? He goes, well, in verse 14, he says, I hope to save some of them. Some of them. He knows he's not going to have, he doesn't have any delusions of grandeur that he's going to convert the whole Israel nation, as some people have today. They think there's going to be massive conversions of Jews before Christ comes back. That's not going to happen. We're going to convert a remnant of Jews just like St. Paul did back in the first century. So he has no illusions of what's going to happen. And that's what we do. Those that don't want to listen to the message, we say the same thing St. Paul said in Romans 11. He says, look, they're in their hardness. They're not going to change. God's going to deal with them. We can give them the gospel, we can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, you see? And that's all our job is to do, to give them what they need and let them make their decision.
Mark, thanks for the time. I'll let someone else get in, and I'm glad the topic actually gets to be discussed still in this day and age.
Oh, thanks John. Much. God bless you for calling. I'm going to take one other caller here that's on my caller board, but I wanted to ask Dr. Sengena something for clarification. I have never gone through the Babylonian Talmud in its entirety, and I noticed in your article, Dr. Sengenis, that you mentioned that there are more honest translations, and you especially reference someone by the name of Steinsaltz. So that I can understand this for my own benefit, future benefit and study, is that the copy of the Babylonian Talmud that I had to shoot for in terms of obtaining it? And what about this business of differing translations of the Babylonian Talmud?
Yeah, and I think I also mentioned the Sansino edition.
Yes.
That's more reliable as well. And the reason we have to do this is because there are sanitized versions of the Talmud that have appeared throughout the years wherein the original text has been altered. And some of the texts that have been altered have been those that have accused Jesus of being in hell and being pissed on and boiling excrement and all kinds of things like that. They talk about Mary being a whore and things of that nature. Those were in the original Babylonian Talmud editions, and some of those still exist today. So when we read the Talmud, we have to make sure that we know the distinction between the two and point out to people that some versions have been sanitized.
Yes, and that's important for me to know because that expands my preliminary, and I emphasize preliminary knowledge in all of this, where I'm at some point going to get a copy of the, hopefully, of the Steinsaltz or Sansino editions of the Talmud and avail myself of more of the information that's in there in regard to studying this larger dynamic that we're speaking of this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel in British Columbia, Canada, you're on the line for Dr. Robert Sengenis. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning. It's nice to hear a couple of other sophists having at it.
Good morning.
I just got a quick question. Maybe you could disabuse me of an idea I have picked up somewhere that Obama is actually a Jew through his mother.
I have no knowledge of that one way or the other. How about you, Dr. Skinnis?
No, this would be a first. I haven't heard it, but somebody might want to investigate that.
I heard she's from, she's originally from Kansas, the heartland, and she's called Jewish Mama.
Yeah, I have to plead ignorance on that. I just haven't seen the evidence.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you could check it out. Okay, I just conclude with something that I don't. It's apocryphal, but I believe it's once when he said that he would like to see the last politician strangled with the entrails of the last priest.
Who said that?
That's my perspective, huh?
Who said that?
As I say, it's apocryphal, but I believe still was.
Oh. I don't know. Mark, I didn't hear all of that, Mark, so I'm not sure. Maybe you can rephrase it.
I guess he was quoting something using the term apocrypha advisedly here. He was saying that in colloquial American and Canadian English that apocryphally, there was someone who made certain statements about the kind of violent end that certain religious and political readers, political and religious leaders, should have at the end of their lives. I guess.
No. Mark, can you hear me? I'm on a Skype phone. I know the reception is not good. No,
yeah, try it again.
We would like to see the last politician strangled with the entrails of the last priest.
Okay, I guess, is that a commentary both on the corruption in politics and the priesthood?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Amen. Okay, I gotta go. Great show. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
Okay, I finally got what he was saying.
Yeah, I will try not to use that quotation when I'm preaching in a Lutheran church this Sunday in San Antonio, but I understand the sentiments. You know, I think it's in Lamentations. I know it's in chapter 2. My memory is that it's verse 8, where Jeremiah observes that in the whole context of the mess of the Babylonian exile, in reference to Judah, he says that her kings and princes are among the Gentiles, the law is no more, and her prophets find no vision from the Lord. Mm. That's maybe a biblical verbiage that expresses at least some of the same sentiments as the apocryphal statement was that we got from Canada this morning. But it's well taken. I think when you clearly, whether you're talking about an individual or you're talking about an entire nation or an entire empire, that when certain blatant disregards for God's word and God's law and the gospel come into play, that those individuals and those collective groups that espouse certain things will eventually receive God's judgment unless there's repentance. So let's trust that at least in some cases there will be repentance in the days ahead, so that some folks who maybe are on the fast track right now to spiritual disaster might be saved from it. EA in Tennessee, you're on the line for Dr. Robertson Guinness. Go ahead, sir.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I had to turn my internet down because it's running behind. I have a question for both of you. And of course, Mark, I really appreciate your show. I want to thank you for it. But you had a listener there a while ago that I was listening to. He was, you know, talking about the different Jews and everything. And the question I have for you is, it's actually in Genesis, the 48th and 49th chapter. It's really, they call that nation Israel over there, and Jacob actually put his name on the children of Joseph, according to Genesis 48. And when the Syrians did take those, all through the Old Testament, it separates those houses right there, the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And what I'm getting at is, have any of you all studied or done a study anywhere that would find out where the people of the house of Israel went?
Well, all we know is that they were dispersed to the nations of the world, and there's no limitation as to what nations they went to. They went everywhere, basically, and they assimilated with those nations. So, you know, there's no list of nations that we know that they went to. If that's what you're looking for.
Yes, that's what I was talking about.
No, there's no list of nations. Nobody knows where all those nations are.
But there is a lot of prophecy about them in the Bible. And that's what especially over in Jeremiah and Isaiah. And,
yeah. Well, the prophecies about the restoration of Israel after Israel was already after the nation of Israel, the 10 tribes were already dispersed in 722. All those prophecies about the restoration of Israel do not refer to a national Israel. They refer to a spiritual Israel, and that was fulfilled by the church. See, and this is exactly the problem that we have today, is that many people take those prophecies in Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Zechariah about a restoration of Israel, and they say, well, that applies to the national Israel today. And so of 1948, that was fulfilled. But that's all malarkey. It's just not true at all.
That references EA, a book you might want to take a look at, Prophecy in the Church, by Dr. Oswald T. Allis, A-L-L-I-S, formerly of Princeton and Westminster. We'll be back.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a biweekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We have been joined today by Dr. Robert Sungenis, S-U-N-G-E-N-I-S, and you can find his website, which is Catholic Apologetics International, at CatholicINTL.com. We've been talking about neoconservatives and the Jewish connection. Dr. Sungenis, keeping in mind we've only got a handful of minutes left, I often find myself wondering at this incredible, improbable, contradictory, paradoxical political and religious coalition that supports the Zionist state of Israel. I'm now reflecting as well on the same type of improbabilities and contradictions and dynamics that characterize the religious and political groups that oppose many of the tenets of Zionism and the modern state of Israel. Do you think that the clash between those coalitions ideologically is going to come into greater focus in American society in the days ahead as we seem to be expanding this war in the Middle East?
Well, I don't know. I've tried not to predict the future. Whenever I do,
I'm a lousy prophet myself.
I would say that in light of your question, I think we need to give the other side of the story, and I think programs like this need to be put out into the public view so people can get both sides of the story, because we are definitely overwhelmed by their point of view today. So we need to even the score.
Yes, and looking at this whole business of the data that we are routinely not shown in the American educational and media institutions of the so-called establishment, you have a list in your article of the number of Israeli murders that have been committed in major instances just since 1946. I mean, it's staggering to go down this list of things, some of which I remember at the time, some of which I don't, some of which predated my own birth. But looking at the whole picture on a comprehensive basis, it certainly would seem to completely undermine the Fox News perspective, which is that the Israelis are the good guys and everybody else involved that opposes their agenda is comprised of the bad guys.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, that list, I think of about 30 items I've put on there of atrocities that the Israelis have propagated, is written by a Jew. That's where I got all the historical information. You know,
yes.
I mean, the Jews are the best sources of information to talk about the Jews. It's amazing. That's what I found in doing my research.
And that book that you're referring to is written by a guy named Moshe Lieberman, entitled "The Israeli Holocaust Against the Palestinians." That's apparently where you extracted this stuff.
Right. Yeah. And you know, Ariel Sharon, for example. You know, he in 1982, and his killed, I forget how many thousands of people in these two villages in Palestine. It was so bad, he disemboweled people as he killed them. And it was so bad that the Prime Minister of Israel at that time put him away and didn't want him to come back. And after that, Prime Minister, his office was done, Sharon made his way back, you know.
And now he's considered to be a great hero on the part of many people that either know nothing about the history of Sabra and Shatila or don't want to talk about it. Dr. Sungenis, thanks for being on. Mark Dankos, America, is signing off live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Again, you can find Catholic Apologetics International at CatholicINTL.com. God bless you. See you Monday morning.